Hi everyone, I'm Lisa.
And I'm Nick.
And you're listening to It Takes Two, the podcast where two people take two movies with the same plot or premise and watch and discuss them.
In this episode, we're discussing Venomin and a Venomin. Venom and Upgrade, both from 2018. Yes. Twin movies about a guy with a voice in his head that gives him special powers.
I mean, yeah, essentially. There's much more connection to them than that. Some of which is spoilery.
The whole thing is spoilery.
I think I do want to say off the bat, because I assume most people listening to this have not seen Upgrade, and I think we should not reveal the ending of Upgrade, if you're happy with that.
Okay.
I think we could spoil other parts of Upgrade, but let's not quite reveal the ending of Upgrade.
Okay.
I had seen Venom before. I think you had also seen Venom before.
Yeah.
I had never seen Upgrade, and the only thing I knew about it is that people keep comparing it to Venom.
Yeah, for good reason.
Yeah, it's a good movie. Do you know what it actually kind of reminded me of at moments?
What's that?
The Raid.
Yeah, that's the thing. I feel like the Venom series is kind of disappointing.
Mm.
Mainly, obviously, because Sony held on to the rights. It took them an end credits scene to even get Venom into the MCU.
Yeah.
It was, you know, nothing wrong with Tom Hardy.
We keep saying, we have referred to Tom Hardy as Tom Hardy multiple times in the last 24 hours.
Yeah.
So apologies for if we do say that again during the episode. Tom Hardy, we know, is an Australian comedic musician
that we've been trying to reach out to do the intro.
Tom Hardy, if you're listening to this, if someone has listening. Said these people keep talking about you on their podcast and saying that you were in Venom, first of all, we know you weren't in Venom, but second of all, check your emails.
We keep emailing you.
We have emailed you at least twice. No worries if not, though.
Yeah.
Tom Hardy is the guy who's in Venom.
Is a good actor. And the guy playing Gray, the main character of Upgrade, looks surprisingly creepily like him.
Yeah, this is Logan Marshall Green.
Yeah, there were certain scenes in the movie where you're like, that's...
You're like, is that Tom Hardy?
They're just like, did he come on, like, onto the set one day and just do a bunch of scenes just for funsies?
I also will say, we've just watched pretty much the entire Mission Impossible series in the last few weeks, because I'd never seen them before, and it's made me, like, hyper aware of the ways in which filmmakers will hide the faces of their lead actors if they're not doing the stunts in films, and will go out of their way to show their faces if they are doing the stunts. And I can tell you, I don't see Tom Hardy's face very much on motorcycle scenes, fight scenes, etc. But Logan Marshall Green's face is like right there the whole time. That man is doing his own fight sequences and he does a great job.
Yeah, the as you said earlier with The Raid, for those who haven't seen The Raid, it's a bloody good movie. One of the best sort of modern martial arts classics. Again, low budget, like very intimate in the cinematography. And Upgrade had that very intimate cinematography with it. And I don't know what the technique is because I've never studied cinematography in a professional sense. But when the camera moves with the movements where it makes you feel part of the action, and it's I feel like these big blockbuster action movies... I'll give an example, the Bourne series do this really annoying shaky cam bullshit where it is very difficult to see the fight because the camera is like jittering all over the place. And there's a scene, and I don't remember which Bourne movie it is, where both Jason Bourne and the bad guy are both wearing black, they're fighting in the dark. And there are scenes where you're like, I don't even know who's hitting who at this point in time.
Yeah.
Because it's very, like, jump cam. Lots of, like, you know, shots that are, like, basically vibrating at this point.
Mm-hmm.
And very bad lighting where you're, like, one person will be pressed against a wall and the other person's hitting them. And you're, like, I don't know who's hitting who. Why did no one, like, sit back and be, like, oh, this doesn't actually work.
Yeah.
But with Upgrade, it was really good.
It's they developed a new technique for it that is wonderfully low-budget, high-tech, that it really... I mean, we haven't discussed the kind of plot of the movie yet, but I guess I can discuss this now and then we can talk about how it ties into the plot, but it definitely... It's to make the movement seem... movement of the camera also seem robotic.
Yeah.
And what they did was they had cameras that allowed for auto tracking, and they would track a phone. So they just taped an iPhone to this guy's back under his shirt.
Interesting.
So the camera at all times in those fight sequences is tracking and trying to keep up with this iPhone that's moving around because it's strapped to the guy's back under his shirt. So he's doing all this, so it is him. At no point has he got a stunt double. He's doing all this movement where he looks like he's controlled. So he doesn't, he's supposed to look like he's moving effortlessly and quickly, but like also is shocked by it because he's being controlled essentially, which I mean, this isn't a surprise to people who haven't seen it because we're comparing it with Venom, which is very much what Venom is. So the physicality is fantastic, but they did just have this one guy doing it the whole time. And their method, I mean, I think definitely high tech in the sense that it's using this like tracking system. And these, you know, these interesting cameras. But I just love the low budget solution of let's just tape an iPhone to him and the camera can track that.
Because for those who haven't seen Venom, don't understand Venom. Venom is a alien in the Marvel universe. He is a symbiote, which means he has to bond with a person. In the Venom series, he bonds with Peter Parker's rival within the sort of reporting photographer world, Eddie Brock. Eddie Brock's career is basically ruined by Peter Parker. And he ends up falling off the deep end, and then that's when Venom, who had also been bonded with Peter Parker, affects Eddie Brock, and then because of Eddie Brock's dislike of Peter Parker and Venom's dislike of Spider-Man, they sort of like blend together and become Venom. In this movie, they're kind of aliens, they arrive on Earth, he ends up like doing some reporting, and then it gets bonded, and obviously it goes through the thing. There's a lot more comedic element to Venom in the Venom movies than there is with Upgrade. Upgrade was very serious, very dire. The world,
very dark.
The world they built was cyberpunk, very tech-noir, you know, self-driving cars, biohacking, bio-engineered, biomechanical parts. Very much like cyberpunk.
Yeah, I did think also a little bit like Mute in that it's in this kind of futuristic society where things are dependent on technology and AI and stuff, and and we have a protagonist who's a little bit of a technophobe.
Yeah, with his classic cars and the fact that he was never like, didn't have any cybernetic parts in him, which like helped him be person who was more likely to accept the upgrade to his body, which is basically a talking computer inside his head that can move his body.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to talk too much. I like highly recommend this movie. Like, it did a surprisingly great job for like a sorry to get into what normally
budgets
which you normally cover over, like. Because I'm looking at it here. Yeah. Venom cost between $100 and $116 million.
Yeah.
And Upgrade cost $3 million.
I will say, like, some of that will be, you know, Upgrade does a lot of practical effects.
Oh, yeah, which is so much better than the CGI.
Whereas Venom really relies on CGI because it's got this, you know, the alien symbiote situation. And he has to morph into this, like, 7 foot tall alien thing.
Yeah.
And also, just, I would say, the actors. I would say, you know, Michelle Williams and Tom Hardy and Riz Ahmed, like, yeah, and probably are going to cost a lot more money than Logan Marshall Green and whoever else is in this movie, because he's the only person whose name I've tried to learn. Yeah, I think it's a totally unknown cast for me anyway in Upgrade, whereas there are a number of big names in Venom. And it is a big, you know, it's a big Sony production. And probably, you know, a lot of that also was marketing, because Venom was very heavily marketed. Yeah, everyone knew Venom was coming out.
I feel so... Sony's, what's the nicest way of putting on it? I really like Sony as a brand. And then other times I really dislike Sony as a brand. Mm-hmm. I think they've done a really good job where, you know, every generation they really, like, bump up the standard when it comes to...
Gaming consoles,
VR, you know, the fact that VR2... is basically just plug and play now, where the other one required so many extra cables and so much extra work and a camera and stuff. And I feel like their team does a really good job when it comes to, you know, supporting smaller artist studios to produce better games, like Hideo Kojima, who, for those who don't know, had this huge issue with his previous development company, mainly because they were owned by the Yakuza and all they cared about was making pachinko machines. And, you know, you look at, like, the kind of writing that he does and the kind of production he does, and you realize that Sony were just like, here, build your own company, here's money, go away, have fun, we'll see you in a minute, kid.
Yeah.
When it comes to their studio who make movies, boy, do they drop the ball way too often. Mm. We have, you know, the classic Tobey Maguire Spider-Man movies.
The classic Tobey Maguire Scooby-Doo movies.
And then the Andrew Garfield Spider-Man movies. And then, of course, Marvel came along and Tom Holland Spider-Man movies came out. But, like, recently with the Sony ones have had all the other spin-offs within the Spider, like, they own Spider-Man and the entire IP.
Yeah.
And the rest of Marvel is owned by Disney. And the fact that they basically lied to the actors in, was it Madame Web?
Yeah.
Kraven the Hunter, and there was another one that was also Spider-Man related.
Morbius? No.
Yes. And they're all pretty bad movies.
Yeah, and the sequel to Venom is pretty bad. Venom is probably the best of a bad bunch.
Yeah. Let There Be Carnage.
But then again, they did also...
Final Ride.
You know, they co-produced Into the Spider-Verse and Across the Spider-Verse, and those are great movies.
Those are great movies. Yeah, it's very hit and miss. And yeah, they just, like, are trying to literally milk everything they can out of one IP... and because it's such a recognizable, Marvel is such a recognizable brand now, that they are going to guarantee people sitting in the movie theater. Mm. It's a bad time for them, because it is so public that it's, you know, how bad all the other movies have been.
Yeah, but they're also doing lots of movies that aren't Marvel movies.
True.
It's just that the Marvel movies are very much them trying to grasp onto these IPs so that Marvel can't get them back.
Yeah.
Yeah,
copyright law.
Because they've done a whole lot of other stuff that is not Marvel related and, you know, are decent.
Yeah.
Anyway, not to go on about Sony's movies. What's interesting to me is researching this was finding out that there was a Venom movie planned by New Line Cinema.
Right.
In the 90s.
Wow, I don't know how they would have done that.
It was going to star Dolph Lundgren.
That's awesome.
As Eddie Brock. And then it went into production hell and never happened.
Yeah, of course.
And then they sold the rights to Sony and Sony made the Sam Raimi trilogy.
Right.
But can you imagine if a Venom film had come out before the Sam Raimi Spider-Man films? That would have been insane.
Also, like, a lot of the Spider-Man, like, the Sam Raimi, Tobey Maguire Spider-Man movies, like, they're really heavily relied on practical effects.
Yeah. And also, they're the reason that superhero films came back in a big way.
Yeah.
I don't think we'd have an MCU if it weren't for the Sam Raimi Spider-Man
films. It's interesting because there's, you know, like, one of the statements that really annoyed the shit out of me was when Black Panther came out and they were like, finally, a African-American, but he's not African-American because he's African, but like just that, I don't know the politically correct term for it, but like a black superhero movie on the big screen.
Yeah.
And I was like,
what about Blade?
What about Blade? There were three friggin' Blade movies. And he's also in Marvel. Like, what are you fucking talking about? Like, I love Blade. I love Blade 2. Blade 2 is one of the best vampire movies ever made.
Mm.
Blade Trinity has its moments. Ryan Reynolds is in there. There are some fun moments in Blade Trinity. It is an enjoyable movie. It's not as good as 1 or 2, but it's still enjoyable. Mm. But I was just like, what are you freaking talking about? Like, Blade is a superhero. I don't know how you would have made Dolph Lundgren. Like, it would have... What year did the Hulk movie come out? Not Bruce Banner. What was the guy's name?
Banner. Oh, the Eric Banner?
Eric Banner
2003, one. I think.
Yeah.
That was post-Spider-Man.
Yeah. I don't know how... And that looks awful.
Mm.
The CGI... Yeah, can you imagine a
90s Dolph Lundgren Venom? That would have been insane. What a weird choice.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess it never happened, so... But I don't know where they're planning to have Spider-Man in it. It was supposed to be a Venom movie.
Yeah.
So it would have been, like, primarily Venom. And I suspect they would have done what they ended up doing and not had Spider-Man actually in it. Which is weird because, as you mentioned, you know, in the comics, he's totally tied, you know, Venom's existence and his appearance and his... you know, motive for doing anything on Earth are all tied to Peter Parker.
Yeah.
And in comic lore, Peter Parker is the one who brought him to Earth because it was during the Secret Wars and Peter Parker was off-world and bonded with the symbiote and brought him back to Earth. And then they hadn't realized, I think. They thought it was like a weird costume thing or whatever, and then they realized that it was a symbiote. Which is
what happens in 3?
Yeah, interestingly,
the very famous and very memeable scenes of Tobey Maguire.
Yeah, the emo Tobey Maguire. Interestingly, I think it was the animated series did it first, and then Spider-Man 3 took that backstory, and then Venom took the backstory, which is that instead of having Peter Parker going off planet and picking up Venom, canonically in comics as well, J. Jonah Jameson's son, John Jameson, is an astronaut.
Yeah.
And in the animated series and in Spider-Man 3, John Jameson, on a mission with NASA, comes back and the shuttle crash lands and it's got the symbiote on board.
Yeah.
And in the Venom movie, it's this tech company, is it the Life Company, I think it's called? Who are trying to scope out different planets that humans could go live on. And on the way back from scoping somewhere, this group of astronauts discovered a comet that had life on it, and then they took back samples, and then they crash-land, and it turns out it was a symbiote. But when they go out and check the crash site, they find, they talk about one of the astronauts who's dead, and they refer to him as Jameson.
Yeah.
So I guess without going into the detail of who he is and how he's connected to JJ, J. Jonah Jameson, they did mention essentially that in the Venom world canon, the symbiote was brought back by John Jameson as well.
Here's a fun random thing that I just found.
Yeah.
Do you know what movie Logan Marshall Green was in before he was in Upgrade?
What? Was it Venom?
He was in Spider-Man Homecoming.
He's in Spider-Man Homecoming?
Yeah, he plays the Shocker.
Oh.
That's fun.
That's cool.
Yeah, that was 2017 and Upgrade is 2018.
Well, there you go.
He's in I've seen MCU. How It Ends. I haven't seen much else. I've seen Prometheus. He's in Prometheus.
Okay.
Sorry, I'm just, yeah, while you were talking, I was like, scrolling. What's
this guy in? I will say there is an actor, I think it's the security guard in the lobby in Venom.
Yeah.
Was also a police officer in Spider-Man 3.
Yeah.
So he gets to be in both of the movies that, you know, had Venom origins in them. Because we do get Topher Grace playing Eddie Brock in that, and which is fun. Anyway, back onto the pair of movies. They're interesting because they both kind of involve, like, I don't know, would you describe it's called The Life Company, right? I think the one in Venom. Yeah. And the guy, Riz Ahmed's character, Carlton Drake, I think.
Yeah.
So that company, so they both involve like a kind of not very nice CEO of a big kind of tech company, who thinks that there's a better way for the human race to exist, and it's to bond with something.
Yeah.
In Venom, obviously, it's this symbiote alien that he thinks, and in Upgrade, it's this chip, this microchip that he's created that's got basically AI in it.
Yeah.
And in both movies, this guy is kind of ruthless and wants to just move on to human testing illegally under the table. In Venom, it's really weird because he just kind of escalates that very suddenly to the point that his staff are, like, horrified. Whereas in Upgrade, he's very meticulous about it and, you know, really kind of manipulates the guy to agree to join this program and then gets him to sign confidentiality stuff explains to him that, like, the government doesn't want him to do human testing, etc. Whereas in Venom, he just, like, is like, now let's put homeless people in here and bond aliens to them.
He is, and he's evil for evil's sake, and it feels incredibly lazy writing.
Yeah.
You know, one of the doctors who's involved with this experiment goes to talk to Eddie Brock, and Eddie's like, "Nah, I'm not going to help you." And then he's like, "Oh, I'm going to decide to help you." And that's how he ends up in the facility, and that's how he ends up getting bonded with Venom.
Yeah.
But, yeah, he's just this, like, oh, you've betrayed me. Now you're going to be, like, you know, experimented on.
Yeah, and it's just like, he just, there's just, like, a switch flicks him. And what's really funny is that, you know, in the end, this guy, I mean, spoilers for Venom.
Yeah.
In the end, this guy does bond with, like, the big bad of the symbiotes. Riot. To become, like, to become, like, a, you know, double big bad, because they're both evil for evil's sake.
Yeah.
But, like, it would have made more sense if he was bonded the whole time and that's why he was suddenly evil.
Yeah.
Instead of just, like, they discover aliens and then he's like, I'm going to bond these with humans and I don't care if they die while we do it. To the point that, like, people are like, there's a moment where he's just like, oh, it's just bad design. And they're like, what, the human body? And he's like, yeah. It's just like, okay.
What's really weird is Riot is one of Venom's children.
Mm-hmm.
And you're just like, he's like, they're apparently like a team.
Yeah.
And which, like, none of it's explained. If you were walking into with no background on Venom and going into Venom and you'd be like, team, what? They were on an asteroid, like...
Yeah.
Do they just go around hanging out? Like, it's very strange.
Yeah, it's a weird one. And also, like, they do, because they've erased Peter Parker from the backstory, they don't put the like, spider logo on Venom, which he has in the comics and in the other movie, other adaptations. But, like, he still has, like, his head looks like Spider-Man's eye mask and stuff like that. Like, it's been weird. Yeah, both the lead characters as well. So Eddie Brock in Venom and Gray in Upgrade have their lives kind of uprooted before they get bonded with the thing. Yeah. And in both cases, it is linked to these high tech companies as well. So in Upgrade, there's two kind of rival tech companies. And his wife is working for the other one. And they have a smart car, essentially a self-driving car, and it suddenly drives him in the wrong direction and then speeds up, and he manages to put the seatbelt on her but doesn't get it on himself. And they crash, and then these guys arrive and pull them out of the car, and you know, and they've got tech built into them. They're cyborgs, essentially.
Yep, they are.
And they kill her and paralyze him. And that's how he ends up. So he loses, you know, the use of his own body, and he loses his wife because of something that this car did and these people who are like these cyborg people. So it's all, and they're all connected to this rival company. And then he becomes very depressed to the point that like he tries to use AI to kill himself at one point. And in Venom, Eddie Brock is doing a pretty decent job as a journalist, but there is like a hint of a backstory that he's in San Francisco because of an incident in New York where he got, you know, basically kicked off his previous reporting job because he pursued a lead too far, which is kind of the actual Venom backstory.
Yeah.
But he then does the same thing here because he's convinced this tech company, or because this tech company has been doing some evil stuff.
Yeah.
And he is interviewing Riz Ahmed's character and then goes off the rails where they're trying to talk to get him to admit to all this stuff. But it includes privileged information that he has taken from his wife's or his partner's computer without her knowing.
Yeah.
Because she's a lawyer who's representing the company. So then he loses his job and loses her and loses his apartment and ends up, you know, depressed and unemployed. And then in both cases, they end up with a symbiote.
Yeah.
After going back to the facility with the evil CEO guy, as you mentioned in Venom, we have Jenny Slate as a whistleblower.
Yeah.
Convinces him to come back and look at what he's doing with the human testing. And then, like I mentioned, an upgrade, it's the CEO comes to him and is like, well, you know, what if I told you I could give you your life back? And then they, in both cases, don't realize what's going on at first, and then they start to lose control of their body a little bit, and also then start hearing this voice in their head.
Yeah.
And then they can fight real good.
Yeah.
End of movie.
Yeah, pretty much.
but it's, yeah, it is shocking how similar they are. Apparently people have talked to the guy who made Upgrade and were like, did you like know about this? And he has no knowledge of like Venom as a concept at all. Like, he didn't know anything about the comics or previous movies or whatever, and definitely didn't know that there was another one coming out, or that it would be similar.
What's one of the major characters in Venom that isn't spoken of and about is actually San Francisco.
Mm.
Because movies that are filmed or set in San Francisco always have ridiculous hill-based, like, chase scenes.
Right.
And I feel like there is, like I mentioned earlier, there is a comedy element to Venom.
Mm-hmm.
Where the, because most action movies have car chase sequences mm-hmm. in them. Some of them feel incredibly forced. I think the worst forced car chase scene I've ever seen was in Babylon AD. That one was just like, I think it was literally ordered by the studio. Like mm-hmm. they were like, you have to put a car chase sequence in this movie.
Yeah.
Like, we're not releasing it unless there's a car chase in it. So they had to do like reshoots and stuff. Which basically means like the chunk of the movie that it's in doesn't matter. But yeah. I feel like I think picking San Francisco always has the hills, always has like the setups for the big jumps where people are hitting ridiculous speed and going over the hills of San Francisco.
Yeah.
I feel like the world building in Upgrade was so subtle yet so effective.
Mm.
Like you said earlier, Mute, which is in the same universe as Moon. For those who don't know about Cyberpunk, it's basically low life, high tech, which means that there's the difference between the poorest poor and the richest rich is far more massive. Companies operate with basically no regard to human life or, you know, government regulations,
mm-hmm.
because if anybody comes knocking, they can just literally pay them off, or they're already prepaid off. Sort of Cyberpunk is very much combining humanity with machine. I highly recommend Ghost in the Shell, the movie, if you haven't seen it. Then the sequels, and then Standalone Complex is fantastic. Cyberpunk 2077 was a huge like release of cyberpunk media to the general public. I'm excited to hear that Edgerunners is getting a sequel. You haven't seen that, but I do highly recommend we watch it at some point. The world building within Upgrade is just so subtle and so well done. It is very much like a garnish on top of the movie. There is not very much like a shove in your face of like, it's the future, look at all these cool things that happen.
Mm.
Where you're still seeing there's like gritty, undergroundy, you know, dodgy bars, you get homeless, like people, tent cities of homeless people still living. And at the same time, you get drones operated by the police, the visual effects of like being able to manipulate things in augmented reality. People who are so addicted to VR, they don't come out of it and they don't sleep anymore, which is very much along the lines of Inception, which is borderline on the, like, getting into the cyberpunky sort of stuff.
Yeah.
I think they did a really good job, like, the writer did, who I think is also the director.
Yeah.
Did a fantastic job in world building.
Lee Wannell.
Yeah.
I keep his last name begins with a WH, so I keep trying to pronounce it like it's Teremori and being right. Like Lee Fannell. He is also the guy who wrote and starred in the first three Saw movies.
Oh right.
Which is why there's such very good practical effects for gory sequences in Upgrade. because he certainly has worked on gory sets before.
He has written a lot of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Insidious, Insidious 2, Insidious 3, Insidious the Last Key, Insidious the Red Door, apparently.
He's an Aussie as well. He's
Australian.
But he wrote and directed this, and fantastic job.
I
applaud him. It's definitely really interesting world building. And like you said, it's subtle because like you see it, but you don't like it. There's no exposition about it. The most we get is that we do get, you know, when they go through, when the car turns off into this, you know, poverty stricken area, he's like, hey, this is my old neighborhood. I grew up here. And that's like maybe a hint at like why he's not techie like his wife is, but they live in a house where everything's AI, and you know, when the movie opens, you're with him and he's a mechanic or whatever, and he's working on this old car,
Pontiac Firebird,
and then when his wife shows up, she's in a self-driving car, and to the point that she has the windows all tinted so she could be on the phone to someone.
Yeah.
And then when she walks into the house, like when he was walking around the house by himself, he was kind of just doing stuff by himself. But when she walks in, she just talks to the AI and it sets everything up for her. And it shows you like, oh, this is, you know, a world where there's smart cars, smart houses, like everything is AI and tech. And this guy, you straight away, you're like, this guy doesn't quite fit into that. He's a little bit of a technophobe. And then he brings her with him to the to see the CEO guy that he's going to visit. And the reason he gives is because he has to, he'll have to bring her self-driving car.
Yeah, yeah. Because
and he does. He's worried that he'll press a wrong button and end up in the wrong place.
Yeah,
because
yeah.
he's not used to using the AI stuff. So it's a really good way to show you, you know, this is the norm, but he's not quite, you know, on par with it. Or, you know, he's not very familiar with all the high-tech stuff.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
it's kind of new to him. And then it's interesting that obviously he then ends up with that inside his body.
Yeah, definitely, definitely that concept. It's very, very similar to David Martinez. Because that's, yeah, very, very similar from Edge Runners.
Right.
We could do it with that. Let's go watch Edge Runners and pause this and come back and keep going. No, it's yeah, it's really well done. Mm. I really love subgenres of things. You know, steampunk was cool for a long time.
Yeah.
I think it became way too mainstream and very weird within certain groups of the internet. There was a lot of other subgenres within that, with the retro-futuristic, the cassette futurism, like Alien. You don't really see much of like solar punk or diesel punk.
I'm reading a book right now that's solar punk.
Interesting.
Yeah, because I hadn't heard of the genre.
Yeah.
And when I looked up, when I was looking at the book, I was like, I don't know what solar punk is, but I'm excited to find out. I'm only like one chapter in.
It's a very interesting, like, alternate timeline-y stuff.
Because
it is very much, like, almost borderline utopian.
Yeah.
Because you're like, energy's free, we got it from the sun, why did we never think of this? Why were we burning coal? Why were we having nuclear power plants? Yeah. So one of the things that are never covered off is, like, how things are powered in cyberpunk. Like, how, like, he is consumed, like, you never see him eat, right? Like, at least with Eddie, like, when he gets the symbiote, he's just, like, starving all the time because his body is, like, going through all these weird changes.
Yeah.
And he's eating all sorts of weird things because he wants to, like, the venom wants to eat brains.
Yeah, which is why it's interesting, and I'm going to go into my trivia immediately here, because you're saying that Venom wants to eat brains, and he starts out by trying to solve that by eating, like, meat, and then is upset when it's dead meat and wants live meat. And by the end of the film, Venom is asking Eddie to get tater tots and chocolate.
Yeah.
So, potatoes and chocolate both contain, oh god, I have to pronounce this now, phenylethylamine, which is a chemical, which is the chemical that in the comics the symbiotes live off, which is also produced by human brains.
Right.
So that's what they're living off, and then obviously at this point, by the end of this movie, Venom has realized that he can get that from chocolate and potatoes and doesn't need to be eating other brains necessarily to get it, which is fun. Though he does definitely eat some heads throughout the course of the movie.
Yeah.
But you never really see it happen in a gory way, and I think for US audiences, they wanted to get the PG-13 rating, which they did, even though over here in New Zealand it's rated M. But I can tell you something, Upgrade definitely would not get a PG-13 rating. I was like, it's funny because I guess they did just want Venom to still potentially be watched by kids, or else they knew that parents would let kids watch it because they think comic book movies equals kids movies. You know, in the same way you think animation equals kids movie when it does not. I think of Venom as being quite violent because he does obviously kill people. He does, you know, as I said, he eats a few people's heads over the course of the movie. But I was not prepared for how viscerally violent and gory Upgrade is. And it's only in like a handful of moments. It's not over the top throughout the movie, but there's like three or four moments where I just was like, you know, the first time that that happened, I genuinely was like, oh my God. Like, I think I just wrote in my notes, holy shit, in all caps. Because it's, and it is practical effects, and it is because, you know, the guy making this, was involved in the Saw movies, you know, he's, that's where his background is. And the Insidious movies, as you said, that they just have these incredible, realistic, horrifyingly bloody, upsetting, gory visual effects that they use, that you're just like, whoa! It's like, it like brings out like a proper gut reaction in you, I feel like. Because, and also, I think it's impacting them because the fights feel so real. Because it does, because it is just those guys doing the fights, you are just watching them do actual, you know, fighting. And it's not quite martial arts techniques. There's a whole, like, there's a joke in the movie at one point where he's like, didn't you know I'm a ninja? And the AI is like, I might be good, but I'm not a ninja. But, like, you know, it's, that's all real. And then suddenly when something happens that's really gory, you're like, whoa, because it feels like it's really happening.
Yeah.
Whereas in Venom, I guess you're always kind of removed by the fact that, like, there's this big, clearly CGI alien creature doing it. And you're like, okay, you know, I guess he's doing this thing.
And it's always the same with the, like, all these movies, even, like, Black Panther was given grief about it. I think it's two, Deadpool 2 makes a joke about it. It's like, oh, look, guys, a really expensive CGI fight. And it is just, like, CGI characters fighting each other. And, like, all the movies always end the same way. It's like, oh, cool, let's have a giant CGI fight at the end of the movie.
Yeah, I do think Venom does it in a very funny way because it's the two symbiotes fighting, but then they keep, like, half separating. And just inside them, you just see these two guys just wailing on each other. It's, like, that doesn't even look like a proper fight that these two guys are doing.
Yeah.
Did they just have Riz Ahmed and Tom Hardy just, like, punch each other a bunch of times and be like, don't worry, we'll put CGI over most of it.
Yeah.
It's a weird concept.
All right. You want to get into some more trivia? Have you got much more?
No, I've already covered most of the trivia. The only other thing I had, I think, is that Tom Hardy had pre-recorded all of his lines for Venom during the pre-production.
Right.
So all of the, like, Venom talking is Tom Hardy himself, but he recorded all that first before he filmed a single scene that he wrote. And then he wore an earpiece on set filming as Eddie that would play those lines and he'd respond to them.
Right.
And he came up with that idea because he had previously done a movie that I've forgotten the name of, but where he played a set of twins.
I know the name. It feels like Tribute or something along those lines. I can't remember the movie right now. Ah, crap. Acting credits.
I was going to say Twins. That's definitely not the movie it was. Was it called
Legend.
Like, Legend, yes. Yeah, so he had previously done that movie, and I think that was what worked for that. So he was like, hey, this is how we should do Venom. So, yeah, so he recorded all the Venom lines first and then did all the acting and played that back to himself. But that's about all I had for extra trivia. I do think, because the main trivia I had around Upgrade was about that filming technique of strapping the phone to Logan Marshall Green and just, like, setting him loose. But I think, like, you know, because now we've talked about how, you know, he's supposed to be controlled by, I think, because I don't think we get the effect of it in Venom. Because in Venom, obviously, Eddie Brock is being controlled by the symbiote a lot of the time.
Yeah.
But we don't really get to see Tom Hardy act like he's being controlled lot. He just acts like he's, you know, like his impulse control is gone. Like him, things like him climbing into the lobster tank, which was just
Tom Hardy being Tom Hardy.
Yeah, so Tom Hardy apparently saw that, was like, I'm going to get in that. And they were like, no, it's not, you can't actually, like, it can't hold human weight. And he was like, well, figure it out, because I'm going to get in it. So they had to, like, build structures around it to get it. And it was his idea to bite into the lobster as well, even though he's vegetarian, so they had to make, like, fake lobsters out of candy for him. But, yeah, it's very much just, like, he becomes slightly more impulsive, or, like, is acting strange.
Yeah.
Whereas in Upgrade, you know, the idea is that Logan Marshall Green's character, Gray, is paralyzed from the neck down.
Yeah.
So everything from the neck down is being controlled by this AI. And he moves very robotically. Apparently he based his movement on an Overwatch character. I don't know enough about Overwatch to know what that is. But it's also been noted that he moves a little bit like RoboCop at times. But he very much does move his body in a very fluid but robotic way, and it's just incredible physicality. And there's even like a point in one of the I think in the first fight scene that he has, because obviously the character is supposed to be surprised that this is happening, you know, that the AI is able to do this, because up until that point the you know, his mind was controlling what the AI did, so it seemed to him like he was in control of his body, and the AI is like, oh, you can let me have control and I can just do this. And then he's like, holy shit. But there's a moment in that first fight scene, and, like, it must have been choreographed out, or else, like, decided with the actor that this is a thing that needs to do, because it's just incredible continuity. There's a moment where he needs to duck his head out of the way or something, and he pushes it with his own hand. Because, obviously, in-world, the robot is only control, or the, you know, the chip is only controlling from the neck down. Can't control the where the head moves, but knows the head needs to move out of the way, and doesn't, and isn't able to, like, get the signal to the guy, you know, the actual guy, so just pushes his own head out of the way. And it's just like, it's a split second, but it's just incredible for the continuity of the film, that you're like, oh yeah, the robot is only controlling from the neck down, and it's not controlling his head. You know, it can't do that currently. Yeah, and I just think, like, it feels like he's a robot. I'm genuinely just really impressed by how he was able to physically move around in a way that made that seem like his head is being controlled by a different person to the rest of his body. And the fact that there isn't a stunt double doing any of this, this is just this one guy. You know, and I think, you know, from what I read, Lee Wannell, the writer-director, was just, like, surprised and delighted that they were able to find an actor who could just do all of that. Because can you imagine, you know, because they wrote the script, and then they were like, and he's going to move like this. They were like, well, shit, how's he gonna move like this?
Where are we gonna find an actor to do this?
And they got a stunt coordinator in, Chris Anderson, who's a stunt coordinator, who was, and he apparently saw it as, like, a really cool challenge to be like, oh yeah, let's figure out how we can get someone to look like this and design fight sequences that seem like Uncanny Valley fight sequences. And then it's just that, like, they just looked upon this actor who could do it. So they didn't need to get, like, you know, they didn't need to do camera trickery around it. They could just film this guy do it. I just think, yeah, I mean, because I don't know what way you audition for that. Like, you get them to do those fight sequences in auditions, you know? How do you know that your actor's going to be able to do that? But apparently, like, he just was, you know, he was just really dedicated, really enthusiastic, and also really physically capable. Anyway,
as you can guess, we highly recommend watching this movie.
Yes, absolutely, 100%.
It was higher rated than Venom, for obvious reasons. Obviously, with the guy's got had a great career, so it's not like, you know, he's a struggling person. But yeah, wow. In comparison, just like watching, because you go through and you have a look at how much, like, each Venom movie cost about the same amount, which is just over $100 million, and they have just been, like, not producing as much money as they go along. It literally was like 8, 4, and then 3.
Yes, yeah, so Venom in the box office got $856 million.
Yeah,
whereas Upgrade in box office made $16 million. Which is criminal as far as I'm concerned. But then again, I'm pretty sure I saw Venom in cinema and I did not see Upgrade in cinema.
Yeah.
But like I said, that's why I do think that...
A lot of the cost is advertising?
Yeah, a lot of the budget will be the advertising costs. Yeah, yeah. And obviously on a $3 million budget... Well, it's, I think $5 million is what I had, which probably is... It's probably $3 million on production and then $2 million on advertising. But obviously $2 million on advertising doesn't go nearly as far as $12 million on advertising or $20 million on advertising or however much, you know, out of a $100-something million budget. But genuinely an incredible film.
Yeah, really I highly recommend it.
Absolutely.
What I can also recommend is if you go to our website, It Takes Two, where you can find all the cool things like our Discord.
It takes two.co.nz.
Sorry, yes, .co.nz. where you can find all sorts of other cool things like our mailing list, our Discord server, and where we are on social media. If you can share this episode with somebody, that would really appreciate it. We would really appreciate it because it does help. Rather than us having to pay lots and lots of money to go to people outside in the world, if you just hit share and send it to somebody else. That will do our... Because it's a business these days.
We're just like Upgrade for real. We need that word of mouth
advertising. Yeah, yeah.
This is a good movie. You should watch it. And if you think this is a good episode, you should share it.
Yeah, it works. Thank you for joining us.
We'll catch you next time.
Bye.
Bye.